All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 11 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. This is writing class number 2. In other words, I've received your writing submissions, and I've collected them together anonymously in a document, which I intend to make available to you all as a handout, in fact, so that you can all access it independently. But for the moment, I'm going to display it on my screen. And what you're going to see is that all the paragraphs are numbered, so we can refer to them with numbers. But typically, there's only about one that can fit on the screen at a time anyway. And so they are in no particular order. So don't infer anything from that if yours happens to be first or if yours happens to be last. It's probably just the order that I managed to process them out of my inbox, which was not necessarily a logical order either. So there's nothing to the order whatsoever. Again, the purpose of anonymously looking at these in class is so that we avoid making the mistake of taking things personally, right? And so even as I'm going to make comments about each paragraph, quite frankly, I don't remember who wrote them because there's too many. I think there's 11 altogether. And so I don't remember who wrote them. And nobody else is going to know who wrote them. If it's your paragraph, you're the only one who really knows it. And so the key thing about that is that hopefully this helps us to be more objective in one particular regard, and that is in our personal response to the critique that we're going to get from others. Okay? So in other words, you know, it's very easy for people to get what's called defensive, right? If somebody says something about what you did, then you feel defensive because it feels like it's an attack on you. Here, by making everything anonymous, hopefully that will help each and every one of you to avoid making that mistake. Some people are more susceptible to it than others, but hopefully you'll be able to make your focus on the content, right? And of course, everybody's focus will be on the content, not on the person who wrote it. So that's what we're here to do, is as a team, you know, use our collective minds to help each other. Now, I have to say at the outset that, you know, we are in amazing shape here. I wanna take a moment to commend everybody on a number of fronts. Number one, I think I got all the assignments. I mean, there might be one or two, and quite frankly, if you didn't get it in, really, I don't want you to feel bad about it, but I think I got all the assignments, and not only that, the assignments that I got are really good. Okay, so I want you to know that there isn't a single one of these paragraphs that has any really bad issues. Not a one. So, you know, and the assignment was designed with an outline to guide you through it. So it's true it wasn't a hard assignment, but at the same time, my sense of what you did with what you were assigned, I'm impressed. Okay, in other words, I think that a lot of you, most of you, took it, you know, as far as you could, in the sense that you really tried to infuse the writing with your knowledge, with your interpretation, with your own personal style and connections and so on, and all of that is just really terrific. So, as I was reviewing your paragraphs in preparation for class, I really found it difficult to find any unifying theme of criticism. There is one that I was able to devise, so I'm going to focus on that in particular. But what we're going to do is basically we're going to start reading them as a group in order, because I have no other kind of basis for choosing. So I'm just going to start with number one, and we're going to read them together in class, and then we're going to talk about them. And I think our procedure is going to be as follows. We're going to read them. We're going to read the each numbered paragraph, get as far as we can into this exercise. I don't know how many we'll do, if we end up doing 3, or if we end up doing 6 or 9. I don't know. Okay. And what we're going to do is each person who's reading, each and every one of us, your job will be to find the thing that's the best about that paragraph. Okay, because we're going to start with the positives. Okay? And then a critique. Okay? So each of you has a job in each of the readings that we're going to do. You're going to look for the thing that is the best about that paragraph and kind of the thing that, wow, kind of like, I wish I wrote that. Or if I was going to borrow something from this writer, what would it be? Right? And then the second part is going to be, okay, here's something that I think needs to be changed and why. Okay, that's your goal as you are reading. And then, of course, if you guys don't catch something in particular, then I'll just kind of throw in my two cents if need be. Okay, so here we go. I'm going to share my screen. I think all that's enough preface. I don't know if I missed on saying something in particular. Now, what do you think about the size of this font? I hope that that's a nice readable font. Does anybody have an issue with that in terms of screen size? Okay. So assuming that that's a pretty good one, then we're going to read. So I'm going to call for volunteers to read. If I don't get one on any particular paragraph, I mean, there's no obligation to read your own, of course. But if you'd like to read, please do. And then, you know, if you're not reading, then of course your job is to find the best thing about this paragraph and then one thing that you would critique. Okay? So, anybody volunteer to read paragraph number one for us? All right, Abby's going to be the first reader. All right, Abby, whenever you're ready.
The United States of America today is a republic that people call a democracy.
Where'd you go? Oh, stop. I can't hear you. What happened?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you were cutting out. Try again.
Okay. And both of these ideas came from the ancient world. In circa 508 BC, Rome developed a new revolutionary government called a republic. This new form of government is based on the idea of individual equal rights for all citizens. In circa 509 BC, the Greek city-state Athens developed a democracy, a government that gives all citizens the right to vote. The problem with democracy is that the majority rules, making it possible to cut out the minority. A republic, however, works as a kind of indirect democracy, through which all the citizens are represented, from the smallest minority to the largest majority. In 476 AD, the Roman Empire was destroyed by Germanic barbarians and all their advanced philosophy, math, and science was lost. In the Dark Ages, a great intellectual reawakening occurred, known as the Renaissance. With this was born new ideas of discovering the world. In 1492, Christopher Columbus arrived on the continent of America, and after disputing whether or not it was worth staying, the European countries began colonizing this new continent. After long English control, colonists began to tire of the tyranny of the crown. Colonials revolted and pushed the British out and formed a republic based on the Roman model, but now they learn to avoid the pitfalls encountered by the past civilizations. We still uphold this great government, but it is slowly slipping away as our government gains more power.
Okay. All right.
Am I supposed to say the thing that I want to cover?
Well, if you're the one who's doing the reading out loud, you're going to have less of a chance to kind of digest it. But you're absolutely, eligible if you want, Abby, but I'm going to try to maybe kind of just let one person read and then let the other people do the critique. But of course, you can go ahead and get and offer your critique as well. Okay, what do you guys think is the best thing about this paragraph? Now, that is a completely wide open question. So this is, you got to be really actively thinking about this here. Okay, so Theo, what's the best thing about this paragraph?
Well, so I really liked the extensive explanation about democracy and republic.
Okay, so in other words, the writer is making sure to not just kind of drop these concepts in and not explain them, because evidently at this level, we want to be processing the meaning of those ideas. We don't just, especially since the introduction was designed to kind of indicate that there's an issue in terms of how well they're understood in the culture. Okay, so I agree with you that the elaboration of the concepts, the idea of elaborating the concepts is good. Although that is also where my main critique comes in. So anyway, let's stick with the positives. Timothy, go ahead.
I really like the ending, as the author says, it's slowly slipping away and their government gains more power.
Okay, what do you like about that? I agree. That's a strong suit, another strong thing.
Well, it kind of shows you that, like, a fall of America could happen and history could repeat itself.
Okay, right. The strength here is that the author is summoning the relevance of history. It matters, right? We have this value. It's connected to the past, and you see it matters. We're going through a history of our own, and as you say, right, he's kind of taking a negative view, and, you know, that's... A writer has the right to do that, and in this case... certainly, it's kind of like a hook. It's such a neat idea because it's like a hook at the end. It really takes the reader and challenges the reader to consider the relevance of what was just addressed. So I find that quite a gripping conclusion, unique and enjoyable. So yeah, that is also a strength. I agree. So Abby, give us one more strength. Before this writer gets to too much going to their head. Go ahead.
I really liked how the writer of this paragraph said that Rome developed a revolutionary government.
That's interesting. Okay, so in other words, what's good about that?
I just thought it was really good word use.
Okay. Yeah, it's obviously an exciting word. It also makes a connection between Rome and America. There's a sense of revolutionary quality to it. Yeah, so it's interesting. And when we study the Roman government, we're going to have to decide just how revolutionary it was. It's interesting because the Roman Republic was kind of implemented in stages. And so I wouldn't characterize it as revolutionary. So this is a little bit of a tricky thing. But I agree with you, it's a strong word. And it's also, you know, a kind of energizing word. So I like that. Yeah, this writer definitely, you know, has a way of making history lively. It's not boring. You know, this is good stuff. It's value laden. It's good writing. So congratulations. However, the strength that Theo mentioned is also probably the most important weakness of this paragraph. Now, one minor point, you got them slightly juggled around. Rome is 509. Athens is 508. Okay, so you gotta flip those, but you know, that's just one of those easy to make mistakes, so don't worry so much about that. However, this is problematic. Okay, so substantively, the intention is excellent, and but this is problematic, and it goes to that point that we were talking about in class with regard to misinterpretations or misemphasis and context dropping with regard to Federalist Number 10, that ultra important essay by James Madison, right? So a republic is not an indirect democracy. So I'm not sure where the writer is getting this from. No doubt from some sort of external source. Okay. But notice, through which all citizens are represented from the smallest minority to the largest minority. How is that in any way different than a democracy? This part here. How is that in any way different from a democracy? In a democracy, everybody votes. Now, isn't the smallest minority represented there? Sure it is. Each individual is there voting. They're represented. Okay, to the largest minority. So This statement here does not actually tell us an essential trait of a republic or a distinguishing feature of a republic as opposed to a democracy. Now, the only reason why the founders were so interested in representation, as we talked about in class, is because they understood the problem of faction, and they wanted to create a government for a large-scale country, not just a city-state, in which faction, this issue in politics of groups coming together and clubbing other groups over the head by using the power of the government. They wanted to prevent that. Okay, and that's the idea of representation to them was an ingenious approach, because you created an arrangement with these, again, this government that had checks and balances in it, where it would be more difficult to have factions. Now, not perfect and not impossible. They knew that. I mean, they didn't have they weren't too idealistic about it. They realized that a government has to be sustained by its people. So if the people fall for stuff, they're going to fall for stuff. Which is why they also said we have to educate the populace and make sure they study ancient history. But basically, he said, you know, this issue of indirect democracy is not at all essential. So this has to be really, really well worked out. If you want to argue this point at all, you know, please do. But I really, you know, because it's important for us not to fall for this non-essential definition of a republic. That's what it is. Non-essential meaning. The essence is missing. The essence. This is the idea of representation is a peripheral feature connected to other more important things. The most important thing is the presence of the protection of rights. Okay? I apologize for that landscaping noise. It won't last. Okay? I'm sorry. It happens every once in a while. Right in the middle of class. I can't do anything about it. So, anyway, it won't last. So it's really, really crucial to understand this issue. A republic is a government where you have a constitution that protects rights. And yes, as it turns out, the Constitution of the United States institutes a system of representative government and so on as a kind of technique for protecting rights. That's exactly how the founders understood it. Let me make one more point about representation. Because another reason why all too many people think that representation was really important to the founders was the following. Does everybody remember what a big slogan was after the Stamp Act of 1765? With this audience, I feel like I can ask that question. What was that big slogan that was so, you know, such an issue among the colonists after the Stamp Act? Juliet?
No taxation without representation.
No taxation without representation. So there's that word again, representation, right? Because it was so important in the British parliamentary tradition to have representation, okay? And the founders definitely were really, you know, at first really focused on that because they were so, they were proud to be in the British Empire. They wanted to do their part. They wanted to be a part of they admired the British system of government. But what you notice about the American Revolution, if you chart the progress of it, is they abandoned that concept. Okay, so you have to be careful not to overemphasize the phrase no taxation without representation, because the founders eventually abandoned that because they talked it over and they understood it in the framework of rights. And they said, eventually they realized, wait a minute, representation is dangerous. Huh. They became really crystal clear on this point, and they abandoned this whole idea of representation. Can anybody articulate why it is that representation is actually, you know, one of the least important things in a republic? And in a way, and why did the founders abandon the idea of representation? Because what they could have done was they could have said to the British government, they could have said, well, we don't have any representatives in the parliament in London, and therefore you can't tax us. So what would, you know, if we're going to go with the idea of representation as being essential, what would then have been, you know, a simple way to fix that? And then it would have been a disaster if they'd accepted that idea. Theo?
Well, the English Qing puts like two representatives in the parliament, and then they all get voted down.
Well, yeah, you see, I mean, not, you know, we want, don't want to be arbitrary about it. The English king could assign, you know, an appropriate number. You know, Britain was far more populous than America, so the British king could assign, you know, representation by population. He could say, yep, you colonials over there can have this many representatives. And that's exactly what the founders understood would happen if there was a representative system. Then, and what would they have been within that system of representation? Which is why a republic is so much better. What would they have been within the British Parliament, Juliet?
They would have been the minority.
And the minority gets what in a democracy? I don't know. I don't feel like being crass, but you know, they get voted down. And so, what is the outcome here in terms of what value is representation? And in fact, you know, if you understand this clearly, the whole idea of representation is quite insidious, because, and this is what allows a lot of people in society to say, well, you don't really, you know, you don't have a right to complain because you know you voted, and you participate in what people call the social contract, and so you know you don't have a right to complain. Why? Because you're represented. So what does representation allow either a single tyrant or a tyrannical majority to do? What does it permit that oppressive faction to do? When you, the minority or the individual, are represented, get the point? Which is what the founders didn't want. If they were to get represented, then they would vote. And then what does the majority get to say? On kind of a dem on democratic grounds. Theo?
Well, they get to say, you voted, so you don't get to complain.
Yeah, right. This is
Whatever you want.
the way the system works. You've got representation. So you want, you know, what we do in our society is we all get together and we vote, and so we have taxation through representation. So what we're basically saying is here, well, we're going to oppress you through voting, and that's democracy. Sadly, is what the way that it does end up working. The majority gets its way. And now, of course, if the majority is rights respecting, then maybe they'll pass a law that says, well, okay, we're going to reduce taxes instead of increasing them. You know, that rarely happens, but does sometimes. Okay. But, you know, but more often than not, what the majority does is it uses representation to silence the minority and basically to kind of, you know, undo their rights, to take away the rights of the minority. So that's why the founding fathers didn't want representation. They started off there, and they started saying, well, this is unjust because, you know, in our British system we have representation. But then ultimately they said, forget it. We're not going to go look for representation, because all that's going to do is, you know, get us in an arrangement that makes us permanently slaves of the British, because every time they want to raise taxes, they'll vote, and we'll vote against, and we'll always lose. So they said, we're not going that way. We got to be independent. We'll have a system of rights. So yeah, this is such a huge point. So I'm really glad we started with, like I said, I didn't really have a particular design in choosing this paragraph. But I'm very glad that we did, because the writer did such a good job overall. But this is a killer weakness in this particular paragraph. Okay, so this needs addressing. Okay, I think I've said enough on that front. Let's go try another one. So who's going to be my reader this time? All right, Timothy's my volunteer. And I want everybody else to look for the top feature of the paragraph and then a critique. Timothy, go ahead.
Today, the United States of America is a republic which is called a democracy. come from the ancient world. The idea of a republic came from the ancient civilization of Rome. The Romans created this form of government in around 509 BC. Democracy came from the Athenian city-state in about 508 BC. In order to get from 509 to 2015, however, we need a bridge. How did these ideas get to the United States of America? When Rome fell in 476 AD, European barbarians conquered it, causing the Roman Empire's eventual collapse. The ancient world was then at an end, and the Dark Ages of European history began. Centuries later, the Renaissance, or rebirth of Greek and Roman ideas, spurred the European Age of Discovery. Columbus, an explorer working for the Spanish, discovered America in 1492 AD, causing its colonization. People from England brought over the ideas of the Athenian and Roman cultures. This later gave a group of English colonists, who became known as the Founding Fathers, the idea to start what would become one of the greatest nations the world has ever seen. Although many people disregard ancient history because they do not see the connection to the present, the world today would not be the same without the revolutionary ideas of the people of two ancient cultures of Athens and Rome.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so another really good paragraph, right? What do you guys think? What are the strengths of this paragraph? What do you like best about it? Keen, go ahead.
I like how explicit the writer was about making the bridge. That's really helpful. Like, imagine someone outside of history of art who's never, who's not familiar with this idea of connecting the past to the present and the way that we do it. Stating that you need a bridge very explicitly would be extremely helpful to the reader.
I like that point. Yeah, continue.
And then also, I just like the conciseness of it. I like how short it is without seeming to leave out anything important. It gets it all in there, but it's short. It's concise.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, both true. Both true. All right. What did I want to say about that though? I'm personally a little bit torn about the explicitness of the bridge, which I'll get to. But I like your point, is that especially for somebody who's not in our context, who doesn't know how we do things around here, that would be hugely useful. Now, maybe, but I do want to say the following though. Each of these paragraphs is primarily for you. You are writing for you. So now if you need to say that out loud to yourself, okay, go ahead. I don't have an objection. It does feel a little bit like it's a matter of style for me, which is very hard to articulate. That I would like to see it stated differently. I agree with the intention is excellent, and I don't want to to contradict your point that the bridge is such a nice notion that it does help. And I agree with your point about the succinctness as well. But in this case, the succinctness is also probably the weakness. But we'll get to that in a second. What about it, guys? What else is good? Because there is a lot of good in this paragraph. Theo, what else is good?
Well, I like how they connected the different facts.
I agree. This has a really good narrative flow to it. Right? What would be one example of a really good connection?
The from the beginning, like from the very start into Rome, mm-hmm. It's very smooth.
Well, okay, right, but that, all right, so like the idea of I guess even this is kind of bringing this back, which is good, so it's already transitional. And I like the use of, this is really, kind of, it's hard to explain why this is so good. But short sentences are like little breathing pauses in paragraphs. And the writer's decision to break this up into two sentences is really nice. I am a wordy person, so I have a tendency to write long sentences. And one of the most important things that I always have to do when I'm editing my own writing is break up my sentences. This writer has a good style in the sense that they know how to not write really overly long sentences. I'll give you an example of a really good transition. This one here is really nice. the ancient world was then at an end. Oh, it's such a great transition because the writer tells us, you know, really, it's a summarial kind of transaction. He's saying, this is what that all means. And it flows, and the Dark Ages began. So this whole sentence, the writer has dedicated an entire sentence to a transition. Bravo. Okay? It's all too easy to not do that and just state the facts. But the writer has a really good grasp of how to write a narration. So congratulations on that particular front. All right, I would like one more paragraph, if we can, in this group, because we're doing so well. But I did want to say, compared to the last paragraph, what's one thing that this writer didn't do that maybe they should borrow from writer number one? It's right here highlighted, Juliet.
Well, they didn't put what the Republic was, as well as the democracy.
Yeah, the substance of the idea of Republic and democracy. I would say that it would be good to include. And then, really, there's not much else to say. The conclusion is excellent as well. A very different style of conclusion, right? But, again, the connective type of conclusion. The world today would not be the same. That's a wonderful, again, way of summarizing this, the value that's involved in studying this and really appreciating, gaining insight into the world. Okay? All right. So we have time for one more. Number three is broken up over the page break, but you guys can handle that. All right. So do I have a third reader? All right, Juliet is the third reader. Go ahead, Juliet.
The United States of America today is a republic which people call a democracy, and both of these governments were birthed in the ancient world. The first deviations from the norm of monarchy occurred in circa 508 or 509 BC. The ancient Athenians had an early form of democracy, and the Romans created the idea of a republic. After a fairly successful period of their republic, Germanic barbarians deposed Romulus and thus caused the fall of Rome in 476 AD, which led to the Dark Ages.
Okay, the writer meant which led to the Dark Ages. Okay, or maybe, okay, keep going.
Which led to the Dark Ages. When finally the Dark Ages ended, it was rightfully named the Renaissance, which means the rebirth in French. From the Renaissance, Columbus left Spain and discovered the outlying islands in North America in 1492 AD. British Europeans gradually colonized the newfound America and declared their independence from the British king in 1776 AD. Thanks to the ancient peoples of Athens and Rome, the founding fathers of the United States created it as a successful republic.
Okay. All right. So, strengths, especially the best about this paragraph, and then critiques. Okay, what do you like best? Theo, go ahead.
I like the part about the Renaissance.
Okay.
Especially, like, from the Renaissance, Columbus left Spain, discovered the
Ah, yes, this is nice. So, in other words, I agree with you. This writer has done something which is very useful, which has embedded Columbus in the Renaissance, right? I don't know if the previous writers did or didn't, right? But that's good, right? To see Columbus as a member of the Renaissance is important. I've seen that in a few of the paragraphs, but I agree. So that's good. So, yeah, you guys did really well in a lot of these aspects, for instance. So, you know, I'll compare I assigned pretty much the same paragraph to my younger writers in the elementary class. And they, almost all of them just wrote, in 1492, Columbus discovered America. And I didn't see that in your paragraphs, which is really, you know, the measure in way of kind of how far along you guys are. You guys understood right away that your statement concerning Columbus needed to be a connective statement, a link in the chain, right? And so this writer is helping, you know, to emphasize that by placing Columbus in the Renaissance context. So that is good. And it's succinct. And, you know, like we were saying, the last paragraph is short. I mean, this one is short too. Again, not in a bad way, right? I appreciate the succinctness I think writer number one was a little bit wordier in that regard, and it didn't get bogged down, which is okay. So there's got lots of options here. But at the same time, I appreciate the efficiency, or there's another word for it, that these writers number two and three kind of just really boil it down, right? Essentialized it, which is good, without making it unsatisfying. He still managed to, he or she, I don't know, right? Still managed to achieve that. And so, now, any others? Any other kind of virtues here? Okay. I think that, now, what this writer did, yeah, I like the conclusion as well. And so the strength here, again, is another connection. So there's, I'm starting to get a stylistic feel here for this particular writer. So again, this sentence is a very similar transition. Another connective phrase, right? Is it a prepositional phrase? I'm really bad with grammar. I think it's like a connective phrase. It's tying up the paragraph really nicely, right? Again, we want the connection between America and the past. So I like that. Okay. So, critiques. Let's see who has something they want to suggest to this writer as a way to polish this off. Most of it is stylistic in my, there's a little bit awkward wording here for me, but Theo, go ahead.
I personally, I like the Athenian Romans thing.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it was a little confusing. It would be hard to tell when the ancient Athenians created their democracy and when the Romans created their republic.
Okay, good point. It would be better to separate these out. We do treat them together in our tandem fact, right? But I agree with you that that those should be separated out. Okay, good point. Anything else?
It was also a little confusing when finally the Dark Ages ended. It was rightfully named the Renaissance.
So this
that was a little funny.
Yes,
I can see what they're getting at, but it's,
yeah, I agree. This is where the wording here of this sentence in particular, I think, is the thing that needs the most attention in this particular paragraph. The intention, as you say, is actually pretty clear, but the execution is a little difficult because it was rightfully named is a kind of a strange phrase. By whom is just kind of not what you what we're looking for here is the idea of it being named. Keen, what's your insight into that?
It's just that it needs to be defined, like. You read it twice and you understand it is the Renaissance or whatever this new period is after the Dark Ages, but it would help, you know, to smooth it out if you didn't use the word it and it was somehow, you define what it was right out of the gate. Thank you.
You're right, because by using a pronoun here, it actually seems as though you're referring to the Dark Ages, because this is, you know, what you have over here, and then this seems to refer back. And then, as you say, it kind of becomes clear, but it is confusing at first. So it would be much better to say the period that followed was rightfully named the Renaissance. Okay, there you go. That just that one substitution, thank you, King, would really help this sentence. Okay, good. And then one little thing, again, stylistically, which means the rebirth in French. This needs to be restated as well. So in other words, how could we rephrase that? Because what it seems to mean is that the Renaissance, get what I'm saying? It means the rebirth in French. If we wrote means, and then we had, which means rebirth in French. There. That would do it. See the difference there is, again, just stylistic. So I would say this writer's got a lot, I'm starting to get more of a feel here. This writer is strong in terms of the content, a little bit impatient in terms of the style. I'm going to make that kind of judgment just, and I hope you take it in the right way. Meaning, you've got so many good things to say, don't rush it. Give yourself time to develop the way that you're communicating your ideas, because your ideas are good. Okay? So yeah, that's what I would put. The following period, okay, was rightfully named. That's okay. Okay. It's kind of interesting. Because we're at the end here, I'll just mention this. When we look at history, one of the most useful things that we can do is periodize, which means to identify the periods of history. And one of the things that, kind of like writer number one was doing over here is kind of indicating that he has the sense, or she has the sense, that we're in a certain phase of American history. And this is important to do at all times in our thinking, not just about societies, but even about ourselves. At some point in my life, if I've done everything that I want to do in terms of explaining the nature of history, I might actually spend some time writing a book on how to take these principles and apply them in your own personal life, because each of our own lives, works kind of as a microcosm of the way that society is like as well. Our lives are also periodized, or can be, and that can be very useful. And so thinking in terms of periods is really good. So the Renaissance, it's really cool. And I'll give an example of people that I really admire. A lot of these people are from the Renaissance. I believe it was Petrarch, his name was, who was a poet, a writer, who identified the Renaissance during the Renaissance. So that's really cool. In other words, he was able to see what was going on in his own civilization. And he looked back on the way that the world had evolved, and he said, you know what? We're in a rebirth. I mean, wouldn't that be, I'm just getting chills thinking about it, because wouldn't that be exciting to know and to feel that you're in one of those instead of in a period of decline? Now, we are in a really strange time, because on the one hand, I would say we are still experiencing certain wonderful forms of progress. And so we are in a mixed time, which is more difficult to sort out than other times. We have this element of technology and potential progress that will be just staggering in terms of how it can promote human life and flourishing and so on. And yet at the same time, we're having some, we're sliding back in certain regards. It's going to be really challenging to make sure, as this writer here in number one indicates, that we don't make some really, really terrible mistakes. So it's interesting to periodize and to think about, what period are you living in? Right? Both in your personal life, what kind of period are you in? And in terms of your society, what kind of period are you in as well? Having that kind of period mindset can be a really interesting way of looking at history. Very, very helpful. So just wanted to point that out. I sense that you guys are so already very advanced in your ability to understand. And so that's just one more thing that you can add to your toolkit. Okay. So thank you, writers 1, 2, and 3. Thank you to all of you, because we could have randomly picked any 3 paragraphs and we would have had a very productive time. I don't know if I can make sure, if you really want your paragraph discussed in class at some point and you feel like, hey, Mr. Powell, you haven't done my paragraph in class, you can email me to that effect and I'll bump it to the top. You know what I mean? It's random, so I'm not trying to, I won't ever try to choose one person or another. It's just completely random. But if you really want yours discussed, let me know. And we can make it so. Anonymously, of course, but it will be included in class. What I'd like to do is, I'm going to put this collection on the class webpage. So that you can borrow from writers 1, 2, and 3 if you like. And if you are so inclined, you can read all the other ones too. And again, you can borrow from the other writers to make your narration better if you want. And there is going to be one round of editing. Okay, so in other words, I will personally grade each of your narrations and give you one round of feedback. And then I want you to resubmit. And that will be where your grade comes from. I'll give you a grade out of 10 on any of your written work. Okay, and so wait for my feedback. You'll get it over this weekend, you know, between now and Monday. And then get it back to me as soon as you can. And that way you'll have this paragraph done. And what we're going to do is, you guys don't need it much, but I still intend to have you rewrite this paragraph in the future from scratch. And then it's going to be really, I hope, an interesting and productive exercise to compare how you're doing in, you know, one, you know, later on when your context of knowledge is greater. How you, what your take is going to be on this, especially at the end of the year. And so hopefully we can do that. That will be productive as well. Okay. So, any last thoughts for today? Well, I want to thank you guys for your contributions to the critiquing of the writing of your fellow classmates, because, I'm sure that whoever writers 1, 2, and 3 were got something out of it. And, so, you know, it's, and you did such a good job in your thoughts. So, you know, relating your critiques. So thank you for that. And, so I look forward to doing this in the future, because your writing is so far, everything points to this being very productive. So thank you very much. All right. Tomorrow is History Through Art. Talk to you then. Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye. I didn't.